This is Inman's Real Estate Radio, where we go behind the scenes with the industry's movers and shakers to learn what's next for real estate. For more insight, news, and analysis, visit Inman.com. Here's your host, Bernice Ross.
Welcome. I'm Bernice Ross, the CEO of RealEstateCoach.com, and I'm very happy to welcome Kevin Hawkins. He's the president of Wave Group Communications. And Kevin has a terrific session for us today called The Magnificent Seven Tech Trends to Watch in 2017. Welcome, Kevin. Thank you for being with us today.
Appreciate being with you, Bernice.
Great. Well, let's begin with trend number one, automation. Well, automation has been around forever. What makes automation something that is trending here going into 2017?
Well, it's going to fundamentally change that part of an agent's life that really will make them more productive. One of the things that we're seeing is the marketing automation piece is really reshaping what agents do on a daily life to market a listings. All of that stuff is being automated, from YouTube videos posted to their channel, to the creation of property websites, the creation of e-postcards, creation of printed postcards, and automatically mailing them out. Literally, an agent doesn't have to lift a finger anymore. And when there's something like a price change, that's going to be automatically done for them. So they're really inputting the data once into the listing, and the marketing automation services, I give the example of Improv, that's really led the way in that. Now everybody's jumping on the automation bandwagon. So it's not just a wave anymore, it's a tsunami. And it's going to touch everything in an agent's life, from back office support to transaction management. I can even see that automation is going to take away an agent's need to drive a client to a house, because they're going to be driverless cars and be able to do that for them.
Well, I'm ready to bring on the driverless cars. I spent so many years schlepping people around on the freeways out in L.A.
Exactly. Isn't that a great thought for an agent? No more getting into a car with a buyer and taking up all that time. You can program a home tour in and say, take them to these five houses.
And then I can be present with, you know, on my iPad. Or there's another way of being present, which takes us to trend number two, which is ghosting. Can you explain what ghosting is? Because I think this is really exciting, and most of our listeners haven't heard about it.
Yeah, I just recently heard about it from Chad Curry, who heads up NAR, Center for Realtor Technology. And he mentioned that he talked to a researcher at a major university who's come up with this idea. And we all know about virtual reality, and we all know now about augmented reality, or AR. And that's kind of the best way I can describe it, is a shared augmented reality experience. So you're in your house and you are wanting to have a tour of a home with a real estate agent. You flip a switch, a light comes on in your house, a light comes on in the real estate agent's office, and you can literally stand up in your office and they can stand up in their house, and you can literally walk through the exact home that you're wanting to look at with the agent. Now, this is all theoretical. This is all on the drawing board. It involves the streaming on a lot of computing power and a lot of data chunking over lines, but the ability to do this theoretically is there. And what we know about technology from Moore's Law is that things have a rapid ability of accelerating and coming in its ability to improve and become a reality much faster than we ever thought it would be. And evident of that is what's happening in the whole AR world, where it's making people feel as if they're with somebody. Now, that's not going to replace the actual ability of an agent to take somebody in a house that they want to see. This is when the person won't be able to physically be there. They're either in another country or in another state, yet they get that ability to feel what the house is. They may not be able to smell what it is yet, but who knows? That may be on the horizon too, to actually feel that physical presence. But being with your realtor in a virtually or an augmented reality shared space where you both feel like you're doing this together is pretty exciting idea, if not something that will happen, certainly not next year, but something that will happen in the years to come. Because augmented reality research by major companies like Microsoft is just incredible what they're able to create today. Imagine what they'll be able to do tomorrow.
Could you draw the distinction, please, between augmented reality and virtual reality? Because I think a lot of our listeners may not be clear. Many of them haven't even seen an augmented reality solution. So if you could elaborate on that just a little bit more to make sure that our listeners who haven't heard about this understand.
Sure. A basic explanation is, in virtual reality, like a video game, you're creating a virtual world. So you're modeling things to look like representation of what those things are. In an augmented reality world, you're actually taking the physical world and duplicating it so that it's you're inside it. You're augmenting that reality, that actual house with all the exact same in the exact same conditions. The cut is on the carpet. It's not a virtual representation of the carpet where everything looks perfect. It's the ability to step inside a augmented world by your presence so you can actually feel that reality that you're seeing. So in a workspace, you literally would have in your kitchen in an augmented reality world, and Microsoft has a really cool video if you Google Microsoft augmented reality video. You see this one where this woman is able to create a workspace in her kitchen where all of her computers, her keyboards, everything is augmented onto her space inside her house. So she's able to do everything without having a physical piece of equipment, but able to do all of her work digitally in her kitchen by standing up and creating her workspace by augmenting her reality world with a virtual work system. That's the difference.
Fascinated by this. IKEA actually allows you to take their catalog, and you can use your iPad or your phone app, and you can turn it to a specific page, and you can put it down your house, and it will pop up there on your iPad as to what it would look like, this piece of furniture would look like. So we're seeing these apps already come, you know, they're being used right now in a wide variety of places, but certainly I could see for real estate, the augmented reality would be much more appropriate than the virtual reality is, because people want to see what things are really like, not just a representation.
Yeah, and think about it in a house that's not staged, right? An empty house. What would it be when you put on a set of goggles and you're able to see what your furniture looks like and literally could have it so you move stuff around so you see what your real furniture looks like laid out in this new house? The applications are really exciting for real estate. We just have to think about how to push the developers to go in the direction that helps us in this business sell houses.
Now, there's been a lot of talk about trend number three, which is Internet of Things. That's what we've heard about. But now you're talking about something that is called the Internet of Everything. What's the Internet of Everything?
Well, it's really the Internet of Things on steroids. So what we've been thinking about are the little things in our house, right? We've been thinking about the Nest thermometer. We've been thinking about the Ring doorbell. We've been thinking about Alexa and the ability to turn on sprinklers or find our favorite music. But the Internet of Everything really shows how pervasive this is becoming in just about everything that we touch or use. So it's being brought down into minor appliances so that you can turn your coffee pot on with your smartphone. It's being put in sensors in commercial real estate buildings to be able to see how many people are there, what's the temperature of the room, how do we make it more comfortable in the left side versus the right side. Somebody's heart rate is going bizarre. Is there a medical emergency company? If something is getting warm in a certain spot, is there a fire company? The ability of internet being so pervasive in our lives where it's actually in almost every single thing that we use or touch is not science fiction. It's on the doorstep of where we're at. And in the house, it's really amazing because you can do just about everything today to make your house a smart house without having to do what you had to do yesterday, which is build a smart house from the ground up. Now you can take a regular house, and with things like the Alexa platform from Amazon, you can turn it into a smart house. You can open your garage door, turn on your lights, set your sprinklers, change the temperature at home, play your favorite album, lock the front door, order an Uber, order a pizza, wake you up, tell you a joke, read you a book, play a news report. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And you can even have it call 911 if you've fallen and can't get up. Now, a device like that is going to be in everybody's house. And it used to cost thousands and thousands of dollars to make a smart home. Now it's costing hundreds of dollars. And that's really a game changer. So it's not just IoT, it's IOE. It's the Internet of Everything.
Let's go into trend number four, which is intelligent apps. Now, Kevin, okay, what's the difference between an intelligent app and a dumb app?
Well, I know my phone is loaded with dumb apps. I've got a smartphone that has over 60 apps on it, and I know that most of those are pretty dumb because I never use them. But really, truly, what an intelligent app is an app that learns from our behavior. So it goes beyond what automated bots and virtual assistants use to improve a user experience to really watching what we do. You see some of this through the bots online, like Amazon that decides what you might want next. And you see it with Google. It's just kind of scratching the surface when If you've got an Android phone, it's telling you when to leave the office for your appointment because traffic has now gotten really bad and there's an accident and this is the route you need to take. And it's going to take you 27 minutes if you leave right now. The potential of tapping into this big data that we have out there combined with artificial intelligence and machine learning are new apps that are going to emerge that things will get better and easier for us because it's going to learn what we want. So think about it. If we had an intelligent app, I call it Home. So it knows what channel to change before you even think about what program is next or what you need to record or what temperature you want to do before you go to bed, what music a teenager wants to hear in their room and how loud you can only make it and not go any louder because you've set the limit. All those things that it learns from our own behavior can be done by apps that literally find out how we function as people, and they create those opportunities for us by knowing our behavior. And so that's the next phase in apps, is they get smarter and smarter and smarter as they learn from what we do.
So what you're describing is essentially they're using artificial intelligence, which teaches itself, and it gets smarter in terms of responding to what we need.
Exactly. Now, it's artificial intelligence and machine learning together, but put into an app form, so the app itself is learning from all the data that it's accumulating.
Now, Kevin, your fifth trend was deep learning. What's the difference between deep learning, artificial intelligence, and machine learning?
Well, there's a great, there's a fantastic blog by NVIDIA that a lot of my clarity on this subject came from, because I wasn't familiar with deep learning until I did some research into it. And it wasn't really possible before. It requires massive computational power that we didn't have. So it's really taking machine learning to an unexplored area. So if you think about AI as the umbrella, and then a subset of AI is machine learning, and then a subset of machine learning is deep learning, it's really where you're going to. And the two areas that we've been able to take information that we thought wasn't very important, or we didn't know really how to process or digest it, we thought it was ancillary information we really couldn't use. All that information now, because we have computing power, we're not sorting those things out that we don't know how to deal with anymore. We're throwing that into the mix. And in two areas in particular, deep learning is changing our lives. One is in visual recognition. Now, machines can recognize faces better than humans can. They're more accurate at it. There's technology in real estate that can automatically tag photos by looking at the photo and know where it is. You can take a picture of the house and it can search and tell you exactly the address and all the tax data and all the other information about the neighborhood and everything just by taking a photo of a house. That technology is going to go to a faster speed and a deeper development because of deep learning. So in the other area is really in voice recognition, voice-controlled units like Alexa and like Siri. Now, I've always thought that Siri was a little dumb because Alexa, to me, is pretty darn smart, and I'm a heavy user of both. And what I find is Alexa by Amazon is getting so smart in the way that it hears and listens and interacts in the things that we do, is we're using it for more functions. So, you know, the thing about that is if you take it to a real estate agent's experience, and with this voice controlled units where they can not just control the things around them, but they can really have a conversation and create a virtual assistant that eventually acts and sounds as smart as anybody. And the best part is they'll never take a sick day. They'll never take a vacation. So think about a virtual assistant not being a human that's somewhere else, but someone that's actually a machine that can listen to the things that you need and do and take care of many parts of your life, from scheduling to appointments to managing your finances to depositing your checks to all those things that are mundane and don't really make you productive as an agent, but all the things that you need help for. I think that in the deep learning world, we're getting more and more to a point where we're going to be able to create these fantastic innovations that will help people do things every day that today they're having to do themselves.
Kevin, the next trend that you have is security. And this ties into the Internet of Everything, but it also has a whole different realm of meaning as we start moving into deep learning, machine learning, and these intelligent apps. Could you elaborate on that? Where are we now, and where do you see the risk going forward?
Yeah, security is probably the one that sounds the most boring, but it's the most important. And the reason why is because Alexa and Google Home is listening, and Siri is listening. These applications are recording literally everything we say, because that's how they learn. That's how they pick up what we do, what we like, how we say it, and they get smarter. But the risk is they have all that information. They're also tied to the internet, right? The internet of everything means that they're part of your network. And we recently had this massive hacking going on, and it turns out that the hackers were using devices, not just computers, but things that had internet computational capabilities to be able to hack. So, you know, there was an episode recently on Madam Secretary where a hacker got into the Secretary of State's house and started futzing with all of the lights and the refrigerator and all these different devices that were smart devices in the home. It's pretty scary when you think about what could be done in your own house if a hacker could get in and turn your, you know, cameras on you. So there's a lot of legal, ethical, and moral issues. I mean, how many people hit the terms of use on a website, on a portal, for example, where they're uploading photos, only to read them and find out that you just uploaded a photo to a portal that now owns it forever for free? So there's issues with security and with the quid pro quo of giving your information to, like, Gmail. Well, if you give your information to Google for having the free Gmail service, do you know they're reading everything that you have? Now, it's not them reading, it's a bot, but the bot's smart enough to pick up all the things that are in your email to give you ads that are relevant to what you've been communicating about. But if you want to know who has the most information on you, it is, you know, Google and Apple and Amazon. I mean, they have more information about us than the NSA. And so there's this whole idea of what privacy issues when it comes to security are going to emerge, because there are ethical, legal, and moral issues in 2017 that we're going to face because of all this new technology that our laws are not keeping up with at all, much less people not being aware of really what they're accepting when they put these devices into their homes. There are a lot of issues that surround the idea of control, and it goes down to that quid pro quo, right? I'm willing to give you X if you're willing to give me Y back. But if you're going to do Z, then I'm done with you, right? I'm going to just say no, because that's not acceptable. Right now, we're in that gray area of not really realizing what's all been going on and what it's being used for. You know, we're not sure of how this technology is being aggregated and who has access to it. And as that becomes more clear, then things like you're talking about, Bernice, you'd really like to have better control over that. That's going to be part of the quid pro quo. Right now, it really isn't there. We're just letting these devices in because they do all these cool things. They make our lives better. I got to tell you, as a user of Alexa for almost 2 years now, I think it's one of the coolest things in our house. And I would fight somebody. My wife calls it her best friend. Her best friend got very offended by that. But it's true that it really is such a time saver in how we use it. And it's integrated in so much of our lives that our quid pro quo is, so it's listening to us. Big deal.
Trend number 7, your digital twin. What exactly is a digital twin, and how does that play out for the real estate business?
Well, when I first saw this, I thought it was fascinating and probably a little scary. Digital twin is a concept that we can create digitally, a twin, a virtual copy of something that's real. And the idea is, with that digital version, we can model it to behave realistically. So there's a great video, if you Google Siemens, on this topic, and it talks about how they are thinking about it to improve the manufacturing process. So if they can create a digital twin and they can re-engineer ways to create a new product through innovation that can be done in the laboratory, then they can change the manufacturing process and really create better products. And so the idea is, if you took this, for example, for a home builder, okay, let's take it to the real estate industry. Imagine what they could do with a digital twin if they were designing a home in its core systems, okay? They could create a way of better efficiencies of layout in ways that they never thought of before, but with a computing power And using the digital twin process, they could create new ways of designing a home in the manufacturing process that could make it cheaper, better, and more durable long-term than how we build today. That's the idea. If you could create this digital twin, we could model something and look at how it behaves under certain circumstances without having to create the exact home to do this. We can save so much time doing it in the research lab than physically going out and trying to build new things and see, you know, will that LP siding last in a Northwest area where there's rain all the time? And the answer was no. But could have we created that digital twin where we looked at the LP siding under different weather circumstances over different times, because that digital twin behaves just like the constructed piece when it's modeled in the computer. Computing applications today have the ability to do this in a way we weren't able before, because the computing power is just getting better and better and better. And so that makes it, you know, something that even we could see this in robots, right? So when you think about robots having human-like abilities, there's a robot that I saw recently visited where I live that able to detect emotional level of people. It's a retail robot, and it's designed to give information in a store. They have them in France and in Japan, and it's supposed to mimic the emotions that the people they're talking to and size them up, how old they are, how tall they are, what their state of emotion is, to be able to answer their questions in the right way. And so that kind of human-like robotics, you apply the digital twin technology to, and it becomes a little creepy.
Kevin, I know you didn't mention this, but what's your take on the robotics?
Well, that's a great question, Bernice, because robotics is being talked about in new ways, both physical robots and software robots, right? So there's really, you know, the bots that we create that do things automatically in our world are going to get more pervasive, from the chat bots to the response bots to all these ways to make it so that we can try to engage more people faster, easier, and with relevant information to be able to do a handoff to a human. But robotics is something that I have a personal love of. I've been involved in the creation of a robotics team where I live, and a mentor to the kids at the high school that compete in world competition with physical robots that really are designed for a sporting event. And the thing that I love about robotics is that you learn more than just about robots in the world, and you learn that robots are just a way to really make things challenging, give us a challenge in our lives that we can do something with something mechanical to fix it. And that's a real cool thing. So I don't look as robotics. Robotics always bring up for the practical world, they're going to be, you know, our healthcare assistants are going to be assistants in our office. They're going to do things that people would do. I see them more as things, like I do all good technology, to help us, not to replace us. And so the robotic development that we're seeing in the real world today is focused on those pieces that will really have the greatest impact in making our lives better and last longer. And so healthcare is really getting the first real first wave of incredible development in robotics. And in real estate yet, I think we're probably quite a ways away in terms of physical robots, other than the robots we're putting into cars that are becoming self-driving, because that's a robot. That's doing exactly what, you know, is designed to make it easier, better, safer for us, is that kind of technology. So I don't think we're going to have robots answering our phones, but there may be, you know, automated processes that mimic those things. I think that the physical robots we always think about getting smarter than us and then taking over our worlds and all the science fiction novels, I'm not worried about that, because I'm seeing the development in creating robotic surgical systems that are saving people lives, doing surgeries that we could never do unless we had robots, and seeing even the development of robots that can do things in making people feel calmer and safer through the creation of these, you know, healthcare type robot developments and robotic wheelchairs that stand up and things like that. That's really exciting. So in real estate, the robotics world, I don't think is going to have a lot of impact in terms of physical robots, mechanical robots, other than in the driving world. But I may be wrong. I just haven't seen anything in the robotics development that has excited me as much what is going on in the healthcare world.
Well, that's a great place to end. Do you have any other takeaways for our listeners today?
Well, I have one big takeaway, and that is that if you want to see the future in technology, it's really first happening in commercial real estate, not residential real estate. So a lot of the initial developments that's going on in the Silicon Valley is in technology that is being purchased by commercial buildings. A lot of the sensor stuff that's happening is really exciting, and it's really in the commercial real estate world first because they can spend more money than an average house can. You can spend more money retrofitting newest technology in a commercial building than you can in a single family home. So I think if you want to look for the trends of the future in 2017, let's watch what's going on in Silicon Valley for the commercial real estate industry, because I think there's a lot of exciting stuff going on there.
Kevin, this has just been a fascinating interview. Thank you so much for being with us today. We've been visiting with Kevin Hawkins, the president of the Wave Group Communications, and he's been visiting with us today on the magnificent 7 tech trends to watch in 2017. Kevin, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
This is Bernice Ross, and thank you for joining us for MN Real Estate Radio. Be sure to tune in next Thursday when we'll be back with the industry's movers and shakers to learn what's next for real estate. For more insight, news, and analysis, visit MN.com. Make it a great day.